Welcome to the Logic Consortium. Today on the show, we're going to be speaking with Professor of Political Economy, Judith Clifton. We're going to be talking about privatization of services sometimes run by the government. We're going to be talking about the ideology and some of the justifications behind this.
We have to separate what we know from economic theory and what is ideology, and that's always the difficult part.
We're very excited to speak with Professor Clifton, coming from Santander, Spain, from the University of Cantabria. So thanks so much for listening. Hopefully we can learn a little bit more about the reasons for privatization and some of the justifications. So please stick around.
Hello, is that Jacob?
How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for agreeing to speak with us.
It's okay.
Okay, great. As you know, I want to talk broadly about privatization of services, which are deemed to be in the general interest of the population.
Yes.
But before we dive in, I wanted to step back and talk about some of the history of public enterprise and the reason behind these movements. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think that when we talk about something contemporary, we need to think a bit about history. And if we think about ownership in the long term, we see there's cycles of private back to public, back to private cycles. So, you know, public services or services which might be in the public have really been created by the private sector, many of them established in the 19th century. And then the 20th century is the century where the governments become strong, they become the owners, they become the managers of services and many industries as well. And then at the end of the 20th century, we see returning to the first wave of the 19th century in a way. We have more, you know, participation of the market. The market is the force that will supply the services and the industry, and the state withdraws. So we go back to the 19th century in terms of waves of participation, market, state, public-private.
Hello, you're listening to the Logic Consortium, in our interview with Professor of Political Economy, Judith Clifton. She's done a lot of work studying privatization in different countries of certain services which are run by the government, studying the reason behind this privatization and if it has been successful. We're now going to ask her to talk about some of the ideology and economic theory behind privatizing a public function. So please stick around. Thanks so much. Professor Clifton, can you talk about some of the ideologies and economic theories that people use when arguing for privatization?
We have to separate what we know from economic theory and what is ideology. And that's always the difficult part. Some people will claim that ideology is economic theory, and other people claim, no, it's not economic theory, it's just ideology. We need to see what happens in reality. So there's a big gap between what's been claimed about private ownership and the virtues of private ownership and the reality on the ground. So, of course, you know, people look to, you know, to look at Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady. She had various things which her government claimed privatization would do. And, of course, Pinochet in Chile also was one of the first governments around the world to actually start privatizing. And Thatcher claimed Thatcher administration claimed many, many reasons. One of the main ones, and it's still claimed today, is that it would increase economic efficiency, increase efficiency of the firm. But there were other reasons. I mean, privatization was mixed up with competition. And the idea was, you know, putting something into the private sector will automatically create competition, which, of course, was not true. And also, you know, in the British case, privatization was mixed with scaling back the government, scaling back what was perceived as a lot of interference in the firm by politics and by trade unions. So in a way, it was a way of scaling back the government and supposedly allowing the firm to respond just to market forces. But of course, like I say, that was the Thatcher government experience. And then we have to test all these things in reality and see whether they're true or not.
So when we do test them in reality, what do the results show us?
Well, that's the interesting thing. We actually still don't have a consensus amongst people who study privatization, although some people claim there is a consensus. In fact, there's a very well-known expert on privatization from the United States called William Meginson, who is very in favor of privatization, and he has some articles showing all the wonderful things that came from it. And, of course, some positive things have come from privatization. It's not just black or white. But then there's other people, particularly from the historian background, who will really question some of the things that has been claimed about privatization. Just to give one example, efficiency. People like Meginson will claim that before privatization, you know, a firm was not efficient, it was responding to political pressures, to trade unions, to social objectives. After privatization, he would claim that, you know, efficiency has been increased a lot, the firm is responding to the market, to the shareholders, and everything's better. But then other people have said, well, what is the definition of efficiency? What is a firm supposed to actually do? Is it just all about increasing profit? Or is a firm, has a firm got other objectives, for example, employing people and ensuring some kind of redistribution, let's say. And so it depends on which kind of definition you take. Other people have looked at security, and there's some work that shows after privatization, security or safety of public transport has declined. And so, again, it goes back to what your definition of efficiency is, how narrow or how broad a concept you take.
Hello, you're listening to the Logic Consortium in our interview with Judith Clifton, professor of political economy at the University of Cantabria in Spain. We're talking about privatization of government services. We're just talking about some of the justifications sometimes given for privatizing a service and whether or not these justifications hold any water. And now we're going to be talking about some of the limits that she sees to the benefits of privatization. So please stick around. Thanks so much. Professor Clifton, in some of your writings, it's the limits to the benefits of privatization are mentioned.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think there's two things. The first is that, you know, with a very narrow idea of what privatization will bring, for example, you know, more efficiency, we can question all of that. For example, does efficiency mean reducing workforce? Because if you really look at a certain criteria, for example, just cutting, you know, laying off people, you can do that without privatization. And sometimes the efficiency of a firm has actually improved before the privatization. So, you know, changing ownership is not the only thing. The main thing is exposing a company to competition. That is the thing that will change performance, not changing ownership. But then the second point is, you asked about privatization of services at the beginning. This is the sticky ground that we're getting to in the European Union, but also I think in other places across the world, that it's very complicated. We have privatization of water, of energy, of infrastructure, critical infrastructure, for example, the ports, the airports, etc., etc., and even the privatization of social security. You know, we really go to the welfare state. And to the extent that no longer, you know, if these things are privatized, you know, who's going to be providing water for a nation's citizens? Who is going to take responsibility? Look what's happened in America recently with the BP incident. This is a British company in America responsible for one of the worst ecological disasters in recent times. Are the limits to private, you know, foreign private participation in critical services and critical parts of industry?
You, in one of the chapters, part of the weakness of pro-privatization rhetoric was a misunderstanding, or at best a gross simplification, of what private enterprise were and why they had been created.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Well, yes, I think that too much emphasis has been put on the question of ownership. It was in the 1980s that we just simply take things out away from the government and put them in somebody's hands, you know, a private entrepreneurial's hands, and this will resolve all the problems. And for example, like I said before, I think really what's more important than ownership is the idea of subjecting a company to competition. And if we can't subject it to competition, subject it to good regulation. So I think the idea was, if we sold it to a private person, everything would just work without any problem. But the reality, and I think you read the article I wrote on Telmex, which is the Mexican national telecommunications company. It was sold as a private monopoly. So Carlos Slim and his companions, his company, actually inherited a private monopoly, which in many ways is no different or even potentially worse than a public monopoly. So I think the question of public and private and the question of ownership has been totally simplified, when really we need to look at more difficult questions such as competition and regulation and how a firm is actually managed. I think there are much more important questions than just the ownership question.
So you're saying the question of whether there's competition is much more important than who owns the company, whether it's private or public?
Absolutely, absolutely. Competition, and if a company cannot be conceived as competitive, if a monopoly must remain because of various economic characteristics, like, you know, too expensive for everybody to set up a network, a telecommunications network, then at least good regulation.
Hello, you're listening to Logic Consortium Radio here on WLUW in Chicago, in our interview with Judith Clifton, professor of political economy at the University of Cantabria in Spain, which was conducted in May of 2010. We are now talking generally about the privatization of government services. Professor Clifton was just suggesting that the main characteristic of an efficient firm is not whether the ownership is public or private, but whether the firm is subjected to competition. She gave the example of the largest privatization in the history of Mexico, which was the nationally run telecommunications firm, Telmex. She gives the example that because it was not subjected to any competition when it was privatized, even though it was privately run, it was run less efficiently or not more efficiently because it was still a monopoly and not subjected to any competition. We are now going to ask Professor Clifton a little bit about the privatization debates here in the United States. Thanks so much for listening. A hot-button privatization issue in the U.S. over the last 10 years or so, or even much more, has been the privatization of Social Security.
Exactly.
It kind of... The idea is repugnant to some people of privatizing such a public institution. Can you talk about some of the reticence that the public may have about privatizing something like Social Security?
Well, I think that this is one of the areas which is going right to the heart of what we call the welfare state. It's going beyond privatizing industry. It's even going beyond privatizing infrastructure services, you know, like ports and telecommunications. It's privatizing something which has been historically considered, at least in the 20th century, something very, very close to people, people's households and people's lives. So I think that people tend to, this is more about perception, I think people tend to perceive that if the government and the local government make mistakes with their social security payments, well, you know, this is the government and it's trying to do its best, although it makes lots of mistakes. But once this business goes into private hands, and particularly if this is perceived as companies running this business as a business to make a profit, and mistakes are made, I think people get particularly angry that their social security might be, you know, being reduced or not being handled properly by a company which is private and actually making a profit out of doing so. So this is one of the problems, is actually not only, you know, the evidence of whether they do it better or not, it's the perception, I think, of people. And if anything goes wrong with these very critical things, people blame the government. People do not and cannot really blame one firm. In the end, they go back to the government. And there's an assumption that the government has to sort out these problems. And the government created the problems by, let's say, selling these services to the private sector. And therefore, the government has to sort out the problems in the end.
So do you think inevitably people are going to be turning to the government with their anger?
Absolutely. Well, look what's happened, you know, recently with the oil spillage by BP. I mean, BP accepts the responsibility, but it's just not enough. You know, in the end, people in America will, I'm sure, be getting quite angry with the Obama administration, because in the end, he has to take responsibility for allowing a foreign company to be in this country, to be taking on these activities. So when it comes to a crisis, when it comes to a blackout of electricity, when it comes to water is turned off, or that an oil company is spilling oil all over the environment and destroying people's jobs, people will get angry with the government.
Some libertarians in the country would say that that's just the problem. People shouldn't be turning to government for every one of their problems. They should be taking, they would argue more individual responsibility.
Okay, well, let's see if they can sort it out. I mean, BP is making, what, record profits this year?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that the first attempt to collect this oil hasn't worked. So what is actually going to happen to the people who've lost their jobs? What's going to happen to the environment that is being destroyed? Who's going to pay for that?
Hello, you're listening to the Logic Consortium here on WLUW in our interview with Judith Clifton, professor of political economy at the University of Cantabria in España, Spain, which was conducted in May of 2010. We're talking generally about privatization. She was just talking about how in the end, even if a private company is involved, like BP in this recent tragic oil spill that's going on in the Gulf right now, at the end of the day, the government will be the one being on the hook. And so she thinks we need to really look at the limits of privatization. We're now going to ask her whether and what place she sees for privatization in an economy. Do you see advantages to privatization in certain contexts?
Well, yes, I do. I do see advantages in certain contexts. For example, and this is what's happened in the recent financial crisis, sometimes the government has nationalized institutions like banks or firms just because they were bankrupt, not because it is better that the government is in charge, not because it's a great manager, just because things collapsed. And I don't think it's in the government's interest to be owning and running all the economy. It just doesn't make sense. I'm not saying that putting things in the private sector has magical solutions, but neither am I saying that putting things in the government sector also has a magic solution. So, for example, if the government should be in charge of certain things because they're considered vital for the nation, for security, for welfare, for redistribution, well, that makes some sense. But if the government does not need to be involved in industry or in financial services, then I think it's absolutely fair that they go back to the private sector. So I don't have a very strong position either in favor of privatization or nationalization. I think the ownership question has been oversimplified. I think it's much more to do with how companies run, what the regulation is, whether they can be competitive in a sector, rather than this ownership question. So, you know, I think, yes, things can go back to the private sector, and I think many of the banks will go back to the private sector once the crisis is over, and they should.
In terms of if privatization is at odds with a position of the left, you know, trying to expand opportunities for the ordinary citizens, what would you say to that, if there is an answer?
Well, I don't think that that works. That logic does not work in Europe. It might have a different consequence in the United States. In Europe, no. Many of the governments who've actually privatized have been socialist governments, left-wing governments. In Greece, in Spain, in Italy, many of the active governments, some of the most active governments, not the Thatcher government, who was the conservative right-wing government, but many of the governments have been left. It hasn't necessarily, and this is one of the things we've shown, sometimes privatization is associated with the right wing, with the conservatives, but it's very much been implemented by left-wing governments as well. And it's been a way of, you know, basically earning money for the state, this idea of increasing economic efficiency, reducing the role of the state in the economy, improving capital markets, etc. So I don't really think it's seen as something that the left is against. However, I think I do go back to the same point about, you know, the limits of privatization. There are certain activities where citizens will hold the state responsible for, and the government does need to maintain some responsibility, which would be through regulation, and it might sometimes be also through ownership. For example, the financial crisis, the government has to take charge of parts of the economy and has to bring them into public ownership, at least in order to be able to control them for a certain amount of time. And then they can go back to the private sector. So I think it is a left-right thing in Europe. It's just the question, really, of the limits. You know, there must be limits, and somebody has to take responsibility, and that's got to be the government in the final act.
It seems like the words privatization and deregulation do bring this right mindset to people's minds when you're talking about it in the United States.
Well, that may be so, but of course, I don't think there's been much privatization in the United States. Yeah, there hasn't been much, say, since the 70s, for example, there hasn't been a massive wave of privatization in the United States like there was in Europe, for example, and Latin America, and even Asia. There hasn't been a massive wave because it really the economy has been structured with more private participation from the beginning in the United States. But actually, Bill Megenson did actually write an article for us, and there are quite a few things to privatize potentially in the United States, but it hasn't been considered to actually do that.
For example, some ideas like school vouchers, mm-hmm. where you have private schools entering the marketplace, that's more associated with not the quote-unquote left in the United States.
Yes, yes. I understand the point. This also happened. Margaret Thatcher was called Margaret Thatcher the Milk Snatcher because when I was a little girl, everybody used to get a bottle of milk, regardless of their income, when they arrived at school. And one of the first things she did was to take away the milk. So she was Margaret Thatcher the Milk Snatcher. I think this sounds a bit similar to the school voucher system, which you're mentioning in the United States. Of course, these policies can be perceived, taking away these policies can be perceived in a very, very unpopular way because they are not trying to redistribute wealth. They're trying to be regressive, more than progressive in that sense. I can see that these things will be very unpopular and could certainly be associated with a right-wing government. I take your point on that. But I don't think that it always needs to be associated with a right-wing government. For example, the recent acts of nationalization of banks in Europe and now the reprivatization is well beyond right and left politics.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and I'm very pleased with the things we've covered.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And I hope
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you, and you too. Bye.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Logic Consortium, and that was a conversation we had with Judith Clifton, professor of political economy and student of privatization. We were talking about many different things, including some of the justifications for privatization and how they've played out. A couple of the main points that she mentioned include how she feels that the issue of ownership is oversimplified, meaning that efficiency does not hinge on whether the enterprise and the service provider is public or privately owned, but rather whether the service provider is subjected to competition. She also mentioned, interestingly enough, that in Europe there's not this distinction of privatization being associated with the right as there is here in the United States. She gave the example of how left-wing governments in the last 30 years in Europe have championed many privatization policies. Well, thanks for listening. This music is from the band Scientific Map, a local independent band here in Chicago. You can find them on the web. And you can also find our past shows and make a comment at logicconsortium.blogspot.com. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.